What happens when a wrongfully convicted man dies in prison? For some, it's just another tragedy in an imperfect system. For others, like the man who calls himself Trig, it becomes a catalyst for something far more sinister. In the dreary March weather of Buckeye City, Trig learns that Alan Duffery, wrongfully convicted of possessing child pornography, has been murdered behind bars. Something breaks inside him. His father's mantra echoes in his mind. You have to push through to the bitter end. No flinching, no turning away. This becomes his driving force as he embarks on a horrific mission of atonement, killing 13 innocent people who represent the 12 jurors who convicted Duffery, plus the judge and prosecutor. What begins as twisted justice gradually gives way to the admission that he's killing for the sake of killing, his addiction to murder paralleling his former alcoholism. Behind Trigg's murderous campaign lies a childhood shattered by abuse. Raised by a father who forced him to practice as a hockey goaltender, hitting pucks at him while shouting, "Don't flinch," whenever he shrank away, Trigg's psychology was shaped by relentless cruelty. This childhood trauma, combined with his father's possible murder of his mother, created a damaged psyche that found release first in alcoholism and later in murder. As his killing spree accelerates, Trig becomes increasingly unhinged, developing multiple personalities that include his child self and his abusive father's voice. Alan Duffery's wrongful conviction results from multi-layered corruption. A jealous colleague who framed him, a prosecutor who misrepresented evidence, and an ineffective defense attorney. The framing was meticulous. His colleague gave him comic books and Mylar bags, then placed those fingerprinted bags around pornographic magazines, making it appear Duffery had handled the illicit materials. The corruption extends beyond Duffery. When Detective Janes investigates the surrogate juror murders, her superiors prioritize a charity softball game over pursuing the killer, public relations trumping public safety. Similarly, the Real Christ Holy Church exploits Christopher Stewart's mental illness to orchestrate violence against Kate McKay. These systemic failures create fertile ground for vigilantism. While never justifying Trigg's murders, the novel shows how institutional corruption can drive damaged individuals toward violent, self-administered justice. What's truly disturbing isn't just the violence, but how easily justification becomes rationalization. Trigg's descent illustrates the thin line between justice and vengeance, and how easily personal trauma can blur that distinction. At the center of this maelstrom stands Holly Gibney, a private investigator hired to protect feminist author Kate McKay from escalating threats. Holly's neurodivergent mind, characterized by obsessive attention to detail and strict adherence to routine, allows her to make connections others miss. Her methodical approach to investigation proves invaluable in piecing together the complex web of threats surrounding Kate. What makes Holly such an endearing character is her self-doubt combined with moral clarity. She doesn't see herself as heroic, yet consistently makes brave choices while battling her own anxiety and OCD tendencies. Whether managing her daily routines with precise timing or facing down armed threats, Holly's courage emerges not from fearlessness, but action in spite of it. After killing Trig to save Kate and others, Holly reflects that she's now killed 5 people in her life, 4 in self-defense, and 1 doing my duty as a bodyguard. This acknowledgement of the moral weight of taking life, even when justified, reveals a character who understands that sometimes protecting others requires terrible choices. Isn't that the most human kind of heroism? Not the absence of fear, but action in spite of it? Through Kate McKay, we explore the personal cost of public advocacy in an era of increasing hostility. As a best-selling feminist author touring America to promote reproductive rights, Kate faces death threats, online harassment, and stalkers at every stop. Yet she refuses to cancel appearances or tone down her message, believing the fight for women's bodily autonomy too important to compromise. Kate's character avoids simple heroism or martyrdom. She's refreshingly complicated, sometimes breathtakingly inspirational in her courage, sometimes unnecessarily cruel in her treatment of her staff. These contradictions reveal how trauma and constant threat have hardened her, making her simultaneously stronger and more brittle. After surviving Trigg's brutal attack, Kate becomes America's most famous woman, her bloodied face appearing on magazine covers worldwide. Her speaking tour moves to progressively larger venues where her signature gesture brings thunderous approval. Yet in private moments, she struggles with PTSD, jumping at sudden noises and battling insomnia. Through Kate's journey, we see how trauma can paradoxically amplify rather than silence a voice, infusing advocacy with new urgency and authenticity. What would you stand up for, knowing the personal price might be this high? Amid the darkness, a redemptive subplot emerges through Barbara Robinson, Holly's friend, who becomes unexpectedly entangled with legendary soul singer Sista Bessie. Their relationship blossoms when Bessie discovers Barbara's worn poetry notebook and is particularly moved by Lowtown Jazz, a raw, honest piece that captures the essence of their small-town blues scene. Barbara's evolution from a self-doubting poet to a confident performer demonstrates art's transformative power. We witness her gradual metamorphosis through small victories, her first tentative performance at a local coffeehouse, late-night writing sessions with Bessie, and finally her breakthrough performance where Holly watches, transfixed, as her once awkward young friend transformed into a confident performer, dancing and singing with natural grace. Music emerges as a powerful unifying force. When Sista Bessie performs the national anthem at a charity event, her soul-stirring rendition temporarily bridges the town's political divides. The crowd falls silent, moved by her powerful voice that makes the familiar anthem sound both classic and completely new. Even bitter enemies find themselves swaying to her rhythm, a reminder that art can pierce through hatred and suspicion to touch something fundamentally human in all of us. Sanity exists on a spectrum, influenced by trauma, belief systems, and social context. Trigg begins his killing spree with methodical calculation, but descends into multiple personalities. Christopher Stewart switches between personalities with increasing frequency, while Holly openly acknowledges her neurodivergence. The novel shows how rigid belief systems foster dangerous thinking that leads to violence. The real Christ Holy Church's fundamentalism gives Stewart divine justification for his murders, while Trigg's self-created moral code allows him to kill without remorse, positioning himself as judge and executioner. This madness extends to collective behavior. The charity softball game devolves into a full-scale riot after a deliberate injury, showing how quickly civilization can collapse into tribal violence, suggesting societal madness may be as dangerous as individual insanity. In the epilogue, a ceramic horse from Trigg's desk becomes a vessel for his malevolent spirit, underscoring how past traumas ripple through time, affecting new victims long after the perpetrator is gone. The story examines justice, vengeance, and redemption. Never Flinch begins as an abuser's command, but transforms into a call to face uncomfortable truths about our justice system, our treatment of the vulnerable, and our capacity for both cruelty and compassion.